Before we start, a quick reminder. This podcast discusses sex, violence, and social oppression. It may be uncomfortable or triggering to some. If you're listening out loud, parts of this narrative may seem sensitive to those around you. In 2019, two Indian lawyers, Menaka Guruswamy and Arundhati Kadju, were named on Time magazine's list of 100 most influential people. They had represented various parties in Navtej Singh Johar and others versus Union of India, the landmark case which led to the decriminalization of homosexuality in 2018.
You know, you can even the odds in a courtroom in a way that often can't be done outside the courtroom.
Each introduction on the list is written by another well-known person. For Arundhati and Menaka, that person was Priyanka Chopra Jonas. The Bollywood actress called the Navtej Johar verdict the, quote, outcome of a long-term campaign orchestrated by two amazing public interest litigators. She also said their perseverance and commitment led an entire community to a historic win by humanizing their struggles and giving them the freedom to love.
This constitution is meant to transform us from a feudal society to a modern society.
If you're familiar with the case, I'm sure you've heard Menaka and Arundhati's names. They're pretty high profile, well-spoken, at ease with the spotlight. They have strong track records in constitutional law cases. When they came out as a couple, the media gushed about it. At a widely watched talk at the Oxford Union, they pledged to fight for marriage rights in India.
I am extremely confident of seeing this in my lifetime.
We're 10 episodes into the podcast, and we haven't mentioned their names yet. The history of the fight against 377 is long and involves many people. But for 2018, a new set of characters take center stage. Some of them had already been a part of the drama. Others are entering for the first time. From ATS Studio, I'm Sindhuri Nandakumar, and this is 377, a show about a stubborn law, its unjust impact, and the movement to get rid of it. In our previous episode, we discussed a landmark Supreme Court judgment from 2014, Nalsa versus Union of India. The verdict recognized trans people as a third gender, affirming their fundamental rights. This had an effect on the reading of Article 15, Protection from Discrimination on the Basis of Sex. Nalsa recognized that sexual orientation was derived from sex, and therefore, Article 15 should protect from discrimination on sexual orientation as well. Just a year prior, the Kaushal verdict had said just the opposite. Now, the Nalsa judgment couldn't actually overturn Kaushal because the Supreme Court has a set of standards about overturning a verdict. And that has to do with bench size. If you want to overrule a decision by two judges, you need a bench of three or more. Both Kaushal and Nalsa were two judge benches. At this time, there were 8 curative petitions pending in the Supreme Court against Kaushal. And for nearly 2 years, nothing happens with these curatives. And then in February 2016, the court takes up the matter again, and this time there is good news.
It's a ray of hope for the LGBT community. The Supreme Court has reopened the debate on decriminalizing homosexuality. It has referred the curative petition challenging Section 377 to a 5-judge bench.
5. The Supreme Court would hear the curative and decide if this case needed to be reopened. In today's episode, we're going to talk about what actually happened next, because it was surprising, perhaps even atypical. It led to drama, controversy, hostility. And in the midst of all that, there was yet another landmark judgment that set a strong precedent about privacy. First, back to June 2016. 5 individuals from the LGBTQI community, the famous 5, filed a petition in the Indian Supreme Court. They hadn't been involved in the case so far, but they joined the fight with a direct petition under Article 32. That's different from public interest litigation, like the one that the NAS Foundation had filed. Under Article 32 of the Constitution, if you believe that your fundamental rights are being violated by a law, you can ask that the court re-examine it. It's your right as a citizen that the law works for you. This is how the Times of India reported the story.
In what could lend more heft to the fight for their rights, leading lights of the LGBT community, including chef Ritu Dalmia, hotelier Aman Nath, and dancer Navtej Singh Johar, have moved the Supreme Court to seek quashing of Section 377 of IPC to protect their sexual preferences, saying these are part and parcel of the right to life. After refusing twice to entertain pleas, the Supreme Court referred the issue to a 5-judge bench, saying important constitutional issues have been raised in the curative petitions.
These 5 petitioners, who also included journalist Sunil Mehra and businesswoman Aisha Kapoor, were referred to in court as Navtej Singh Johar and others. They had been brought together by a group of lawyers who were looking for ways to continue the fight against Section 377. Menaka Goraswamy and Arundhati Kadju were at the helm of that effort. Before 2016, they had been involved in the fight against 377 in different ways. Menaka had worked with senior advocate Ashok Desai, who had argued in the Kaushal case, and Arundhati had represented a coalition of professors who had fought on behalf of their LGBT students. They hadn't been the most prominent lawyers on the case. But all of that changed after 2016. Some people didn't believe that filing an Article 32 petition was the best idea. There were all these curatives pending, and the Supreme Court had already decided that they would be heard by a 5-judge bench. Both desired outcomes of the curatives and these new petitions were the same, decriminalizing gay sex. So what was different about Article 32?
So I think when Navtej Singh Johar was filed, if I were a lawyer, I might have advised against it.
I spoke with senior advocate Shyam Diwan, who had argued in court in 2009 and 2013, and he said that he actually wouldn't have advised filing these petitions.
If you see the pleadings and the provisions, etc., the manner in which it's articulated, the case itself, a direct Article 32 petition, I think it was very dangerous because it could have been, just imagine if it could have come up and on day one, the court could have said, sorry, I'm bound by Kaushal and tossed it down.
I also spoke with constitutional law expert Gautam Bhatia. He said that, yes, there was a considerable element of risk involved. Since the curatives hadn't been heard yet, the Kaushal verdict was still legally binding. It upheld 377, so any new case could use it as precedent and simply say, that is the law. It's why all those curatives were filed, to quash Kaushal.
But that's where the luck element comes in. And if you have, so Navtej Singh sort of remained there, and then Puttaswamy came, and so Navtej Singh Johar, even though I would probably as a lawyer, recommended filing of it at that time as a matter of strategy. It just turned out very well.
So why did these 5 petitioners decide to move the Supreme Court, even though it was a risky move? Menaka Goraswamy declined our request for an interview and Arundhati Kadju didn't respond. But I spoke with Saurabh Kirpal, who was also a part of the team that worked on this case.
A case very, very close to my heart because I happen to be gay myself. I'm Saurabh Kirpal. I was the lawyer for Navtej Johar and the other petitioners in the matter that eventually led to the decriminalization of sodomy and gay sex in India. I'm a lawyer. We've been practicing in the Supreme Court for decades.
The big question they faced was a curative versus a fresh one. Saurabh and his peers felt that a curative petition might be too narrow in scope.
But you see, we were still left with the idea that this is going to be a curative petition with a very narrow and a limited scope for interference by the court.
What does Saurabh mean when he says that the scope of a curative petition is narrow? Basically, when a curative is heard, the case stays very much within the scope of how it was argued the previous time. In a curative, the lawyers for NAS would be spending their time arguing that Kaushal had been decided incorrectly. But in a completely new case, the lawyers could argue more expansively, produce fresh information, and reference more recent cases. And Saurabh also has one more reason to want to file a petition.
We realized that all the cases that were pending in the Supreme Court, which had come up from the Delhi High Court or where various interventions had been filed in the Supreme Court itself, almost none of them have been filed by any gay person or any member of the LGBT community. They've been filed by organizations which are sympathetic to the LGBT cause, like the NAR Foundation, by parents, by other associations, teachers, etc. But there was no real lived example of a person who had gone through persecution, both actually being prosecuted, or through the emotional trauma of living in a society where their love was deemed to be a criminal act.
I have to say here that many people I spoke with pointed out that this isn't entirely true. In previous episodes, we talked about affidavits submitted by members of the queer community, including those by Voices Against 377, who talked about the harrowing ordeal of being queer in India. Kokila, the trans woman who was sexually abused by policemen, Gautam Bhan, who wrote a personal account of feeling like a second-class citizen. In both 2009 and 2013, the court was full of queer people with an interest in the case. But Saurabh is right in that no queer person had filed a direct petition against 377. All the previous cases were a result of public interest litigations filed on behalf of queer people. Saurabh, Menaka and Arundhati saw the opportunity for individuals to state their case directly to the courts.
So we decided to get a group of five well-known citizens who had contributed to this country to file a petition under Article 32 of the Constitution, which allows a citizen to directly go to the Supreme Court for the enforcement of their fundamental right and ask the court for recognition of their life, really, and for them to live the way they wanted to, and with a hope that the court would actually deliver on the promise of all the judgments that they had given in the past. And it should not be a mere verbal formulaic statement about your commitment to rights.
I asked Saurabh about how this team of lawyers came to work together with these petitioners.
Actually, that's how did the team of lawyers come together for the Navdeep Johar case. It's an almost emotional experience because it was really... Initially, I think three of us, which is Menaka Guruswamy, Arundhati Karju, and me.
They were friends. They were lawyers. Menaka and Saurabh were, at this point, out as gay in the legal fraternity. When they decided to file a direct petition, they had the tough task of finding people to put their names on it.
Remember that point of time, it was a crime to be a member of the LGBT community. So to get people to file the petition was not easy.
They tapped into their networks and asked people. Many said no, but five individuals said yes. Ritu Dalmia, a celebrity chef, was one of them. When I spoke with her recently, Ritu admitted that she hadn't been a very political person, that she saw herself primarily as a chef and not a lesbian activist.
I went for a couple of meetings between the lawyers of the earlier cases, and there was so much infighting and there was so much, how shall I say, it wasn't a nice... I didn't get a good feeling. I'm sure they did a lot of work as well.
Ritu is referring to the disagreements within the community, which we've talked about in detail in episode 4.
We have to admit NAS Foundation and all really have been working on this for years now. But as I said, I didn't want to be involved in it anymore. I send a check once in a while, and that was the end of it.
But her friend Menaka Guruswamy, who had represented Ritu in another case, had asked her if she would be willing to add her name to the petition against 377.
For me, it was really a principle thing that I'm not a criminal and I don't want to be labeled as a criminal. So not that it mattered to my life. It's not that I was facing difficulties that my parents weren't accepting it or I had social. I'm a rich, independent human being, self-made woman. So no one could, bully me or no one could make me feel lesser than. But it was really a matter of principle that, hang on, I don't deserve to be a criminal.
So the famous five came together and took a stand for their rights as queer individuals. They filed a petition in the Supreme Court in June 2016. At the same time, a group of trans activists also filed an Article 32 petition asking for Section 377 to be repealed. Here is their lawyer, Jenna Kothari.
We then were discussing that, you know, how does NALSA revive this fight? And, you know, NALSA kind of gave rights to the trans community. And we were discussing this and we said, you know, there is a window that trans activists can challenge 377. And Akai and two other activists from Karnataka, Umi from Jeeva and Sana. So they were very, very keen to do that. And so we decided to file the petition, and we filed this petition. And actually they are the only trans petitioners in all the petitions, you know, so that was also very important.
Somewhat unsurprisingly, given how slow the judicial process can be, the case went into cold storage for over a year. And then all of a sudden, like Shyam Diwan said earlier, Puttaswamy happened.
The decision of the then central government to bring it by an executive order was wrong. Therefore, I approached the court.
Puttaswamy was big news. By this time, Aadhaar, the world's largest biometric ID system, had become a much contested issue in India.
Ab aap apni ungliyon ko machine par rakhein. Pehle baayein, phir daayein.
I remember even though it wasn't officially mandatory, by 2017, it felt like you needed it for everything. Multiple accountants refused to file my taxes for me because I didn't have one. I couldn't get a SIM card without one. Even today, Aadhaar isn't without controversy. And a lot of data privacy experts have raised concerns about it, stating that it's a violation of Indians' fundamental right to privacy.
Aadhaar, aam aadmi ka adhikar.
But the thing is, India's constitution doesn't mention privacy at all. The closest thing we have is Article 21, Life and Personal Liberty. But its reading isn't super clear. In a case from 1962, the court said a police officer cannot enter someone's home without prior authorization. But there was still no defined right to privacy. And then there's the emergency era case of ADM Jabalpur, a notorious judgment which suspended the right to a fair trial for those detained by law enforcement. And everyone's favorite, the Suresh Kumar Kaushal verdict of 2013, which recriminalized consensual gay sex, even in private. Here's Shyam Diwan.
And so in terms of Article 21, the two worst decisions were ADM Jabalpur and the Kaushal case.
With regards to Aadhaar, some citizens decided to argue that privacy was, in fact, a right given by the Indian Constitution, making the data collection of the scheme potentially unlawful. One of these people was K.S. Puttaswamy, a retired judge of the Karnataka High Court. He, along with others, took this matter to the Supreme Court in 2012, and 5 years later, he got a verdict from a large bench consisting of 9 judges. 9! Shyam Diwan and Anand Grover argued in the case, by the way. Their stance, unsurprisingly, was that Indians do have a right to privacy.
In a blow to Prime Minister Modi's government, the judges say every Indian has a fundamental right to privacy protected by the Constitution. The exact opposite of what the government had argued. It's a boost to campaigners who'd raised concerns about data misuse and argued that a push to force everyone to have an ID card was a step too far.
The Indian Supreme Court ruled that, in fact, Article 21 of the Constitution protected citizens' right to privacy. The ADM Jabalpur judgment from the 70s, they said, was seriously flawed. Life and personal liberty are inalienable to human existence, they wrote, and they overruled the Jabalpur verdict. The judgment went through and corrected a long list of landmark cases that involved privacy, and one of them was Suresh Kumar Kaushal. Kaushal had said sexual orientation was not protected under Article 21, but the Puttaswamy verdict disagreed. The court now said sexual orientation was an essential attribute of privacy, and discrimination on that basis was deeply offensive to a person's dignity. But the court couldn't overturn the whole judgment because Kaushal also dealt with a lot of other issues that had nothing to do with privacy. That would be the responsibility of the curatives.
Namaskar, main Ravish Kumar.
I remember when NDTV news anchor Ravish Kumar opened his show that night, he started with a sinister reading of a Bollywood song.
1973 mein ek film aayi thi Yaadon ki Baraat. Iska ek gana aaj bhi suna ja sakta hai. Aapke kamre mein koi rehta hai tararara hum nahi kehte zamana kehta hai.
There's someone in your room with you. Although I'm not talking about it, the rest of the world is gossiping. Thanks to the Puttaswamy judgment, what happens in your bedroom is no longer the business of the state. Nalsa and Puttaswamy eroded the authority of Kaushal, leaving it much weaker than it was in 2013. Here's Saurabh Kirpal.
So they didn't actually perform the last rites, but they sort of dug in the knife, turned it, but just left the knife there. So the actual formal last rites had to happen in the Navdej Johar case.
So finally, in Jan 2018, the Supreme Court announces that it will revisit its 2013 judgment in Suresh Kumar Kaushal versus NAS Foundation. And it asks the central government to respond to the writ petition filed by our famous five members of the LGBT community. That's Ritu and her peers. So even though there were curatives of the same case pending, the Supreme Court wanted to hear these fresh petitions first. Here's Saurabh again.
But we found in January of 2018 that this case was almost plucked out by the Chief Justice then and was put up for hearing.
Traditionally, one might expect the curative petitions to be heard first because they were filed first. As to why Chief Justice Deepak Mishra chose to hear these Article 32 petitions before the curatives, we'll never know. The roster is assigned in great secrecy, and traditionally the Chief Justice has complete control over this process. They're called Master of the Roster. I asked Anand Grover how he felt about this, since the curative petitions that he had filed were pending in court. As much as he didn't like it, there wasn't much he could do.
Now, we couldn't argue and say, no, because the Chief Justice didn't want to hear curative petitions, for whatever reason. The problem in India is the master of the roster has a right to decide what matters are heard and what matters are not heard, who hears them. And that has been a subject matter of controversy, as you know.
To give you some context about the Supreme Court at the time, CJI Mishra was facing a lot of internal resistance from his fellow Supreme Court judges for this very reason, the manner in which cases were assigned to judges. The Supreme Court of India doesn't sit en banc like its American counterpart. All of the judges don't hear all the cases together. We have 30-odd judges, and they're assigned to various cases in different bench sizes. As the master of the roster, CJI Mishra was accused of assigning cases in a self-serving manner. There was one case in particular that implicated him, on which he assigned himself. This goes against the somewhat obvious legal principle of causa sua, that no person shall be a judge in his own cause. There were other issues that we don't have to get into, but all of which had led to an impeachment motion against Mishra in 2018. This is a really unusual occurrence in the Supreme Court. Before he was appointed as Chief Justice, the Supreme Court had received complaints of alleged corruption by him in a land lease case in the Orissa High Court. In January 2018, just days after the Navtej Johar petitions were revived, four judges of the Supreme Court held a press conference to air their grievances about the Chief Justice. Here's Justice Chelameshwar speaking.
My dear friends, we are all, four of us are convinced that unless this institution is preserved and it maintains its equanimity, democracy will not survive in this country or any country.
In the midst of all this, the CJI chose to pluck out the new petitions against 377 and hear those. He even expedited them. With Nalsa and Puttaswamy having gone the way they did, Saurabh says it seemed like this special treatment was a good sign.
And there was no reason for him to do that unless he wanted to overturn the earlier verdict of 2013, which had recriminalized the Section 377. Because if he simply wanted to affirm that, there was no reason to expedite it because the section already stood in the statute book. So the only reason for his expedition could have been his desire to overturn that earlier decision.
And maybe the Chief Justice wanted to hear the Article 32 petitions because they were broader in scope and would have allowed for more arguments and more expansive discussions about rights. Constitutional experts I spoke with said that the correct thing to do procedurally would have been to hear the curatives, mark them as too narrow in scope, and then hear the fresh Article 32 petitions. Not leave the curatives hanging. One thing is clear. We'll never know why the Chief Justice acted the way that he did unless he talks about it himself. Everything else would be speculation. Mishra was months from retirement, and cases that year would be a big part of his legacy. The cases he chose to focus on, like the Sabarimala temple entry issue and 377, fit with his broader trajectory of focusing on women's rights and sexual minorities. When Chef Ritu Dalmia found out in January 2018 that her case would be heard, she had this to say in an interview.
I think this is the most amazing step that has happened in the history of this case. And to be honest with you, for me, what's very important is my faith in the constitution and my faith in the court system has been just put back, because it's been very disappointing what happened in 2014. And mm-hmm. now with this, there's some light at the end of the tunnel again.
Ritu, Navtej and others, the famous five, had opened a door. And it made way for more people to step through and add their name to the case. Other people and organizations started filing new petitions under Article 32. Hotelier Keshav Suri was one. Here's him in an interview explaining why he decided to add his name to the case.
So that was it, because I have the resources. I think it was time that people that do have the resources, that are a part of this community, need to step up, speak up. They need to play their part in this evolution that is happening.
Keshav said that he had been in touch with the five original petitioners and their lawyers and alerted them about his decision to move the court. In his petition, he talked about the pink economy, the potential of economic growth that India would experience if it allowed queer people to participate more actively, more fully and freely in all aspects of life, including employment and business. And soon after, another petition was filed. This time by a group of 20 people.
20 LGBT students from IIT have moved the Supreme Court seeking quashing of Section 377 that criminalizes homosexuality. Supreme Court gives an indication that their plea will be examined.
The idea for this petition stemmed from an IIT alum called Anand Vasudevan.
I think what's relevant is to say that I'm 54, I'm gay, I live in Mumbai.
Anand had the idea to submit a petition on behalf of LGBTQI IIT students and alumni. Anand was a friend of a friend to Menaka Guruswamy, and she and Arundhati Kaju agreed to represent the IIT petitioners, all of whom belonged to a queer support group called Pravriti. They told their stories about mental health struggles, ostracism, and lack of acceptance, all collected to show the court how this law was impacting people. Anand Vasudevan wasn't a petitioner himself, but he orchestrated the whole thing. I asked him why he thought it was important to add this petition when there were already these writ petitions and curative pending.
So I felt that a petition from IIT would be very, very powerful because of what you said, that IIT is and has been forever a very aspirational brand for middle-class India. And if there was this petition from the IITians, it would kind of forcefully and powerfully, bring that message to middle-class India drawing rooms that, look, there is this huge, segment of people, and that it's normal for the parents who are reading about this and watching about this on TV, that it's possible that tomorrow our children turn out to be LGBTQ. And it's perfectly normal. These are perfectly normal people. It's normal and okay to be LGBTQ.
The petitions kept increasing in number. Activists like Ashok Rao Kavi and Arif Jaffer, who had been arrested under 377 in 2001 in Lucknow, filed them. And then, of course, petitions were also filed by those whose curatives were pending in the Kaushal case, because they wanted their voices to also be heard, and it didn't seem like their curatives were going to come up for hearing. Here's Anand Grover.
So when the matter was listed, then a lot of these people came to me and they said, look, we have suffered. Arif Jaffer, Ashok Rao Kavi, who has been there from 1980s and, all the time arguing, etc. They came to our office and they said, look, we want to file petitions. And then we filed petitions on their behalf. In fact, the Chief Justice said, why do you want another petition? I said, well, the persons who have actually suffered must be heard,
The hope was that the Supreme Court would tag all of these cases together, which it did. All these petitions would be heard together. In July 2018, inside the Chief Justice's courtroom, courtroom number one. That's on our next episode. The news excerpt that you hear in this episode from the Times of India was read by Ashim De Silva. 377 is a production of ATS Studio, a division of All Things Small. This episode was hosted by me, Sindhuri Nandakumar, and written by me and Ashim De Silva, who also produced the show. Script supervision is by Deveya Bopanna and Archana Nathan, with editorial input from Sidhin Varukut and Supriya Nair. The music and sound design is by Madhav Ayachit, and the episode is mixed and mastered by Ankit Suryakant. Our executive producer is Gaurav Vaz. Our legal consultant is Amshula Prakash. We received administrative support from Anushka Mukherjee. All clips and voices used in this podcast are owned by their original creators. You can find more information about this episode and our show notes at allthingssmall.in/377.